This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we are all on this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation of the things that God is showing me as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other episodes at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me at facebook.com/botfpodcast, on Instagram at botfpodcast, or email info@botfpodcast. And today we're continuing on the journey talking about when God's answer to our prayer is no. Is he still good? And we're recording this pretty early. We're still in the middle of the phases of quarantine. I'm getting a lot of questions from friends and even internally sometimes, like, why is God letting this happen? We're praying for healing and sometimes that doesn't happen. And we're praying for financial stability. And right now that's really hard for a lot of people. Is God still good even though our situation is hard? And I'm here to say yes. And part of the reason I'm doing all of these interviews is because I don't want you to just take it from me. I want you to see it from so many different angles. And today we are here with Michelle Watson, and she is one of the hosts of the Pantry podcast. And the reason that we're talking with her today is when I asked this question, her answer was, when God says no, I get excited. That piqued my interest. So hopefully it piques yours too, and we'll get to that later in the episode. So I want Michelle to tell us a little bit about herself and her podcast.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, so me and my husband, we've been married 3 years now. We met at church. He started going to our church 1 month after I did to the day. We just connected. We were both fresh back. Well, he was fresh back in the faith, and I was new to the faith like 3 months in. We really bonded over just talking about God, because, you know, in the beginning, you can't get enough of that. For us, we realized that was the foundation that made us work as a couple. When we got married, we were like, this isn't going to change. Now we're sitting on the sofa at night and just talking God. You know, we're applying him to everything that we're thinking and talking about. And it's funny because back in February, we were praying for paths of purpose, I guess you can say. And at the same time, Shay leads our life group. It's what we call Bible study at our church. And we had started live streaming, which is before all the COVID stuff, but we started live streaming life group, and people started saying they enjoyed hearing us. This is around the same time that we'd been praying for, you know, some way to be used in a new way. We decided, hey, maybe a podcast isn't the craziest idea. We were talking, and I think we were in the kitchen, and I was leaning on our pantry door, and Shay came up with the idea and said, why don't we call it The Pantry? The idea behind The Pantry podcast is that it's your spiritual storehouse. So we're talking about the heart, you know, the pantry inside of you where you're storing up God's word. What is in your heart? You know, we've got, you know, real pantry in your kitchen. You've got the staples, the treats, the snacks, the ingredients. You know, it's all about nutrition. You might have some junk. You might have some random things that aren't even food in there. And we're about taking that analogy and carrying it over, like, what is going to help you get through this walk with Christ in the most fruitful way? What do you need to have as a staple? What do you need to get rid of? Just call it what it is. Go forth. You know, sometimes we intro with beatboxing, but and other random things, but we always just want to keep it to the Bible because that's the one thing you can count on. And so we made this plan to launch back in May. So I guess that would have been 3 or 4 months later. And it was very strategic because I'm in marketing and I'm in design. So I had this launch plan. And then in March, COVID happened. And we saw all of the responses from our friends that believe in Christ and our friends who don't. And we realized we were going to move up the timeline, that there was no point having this nice polished thing, and that we already had God's word. We already were ready to do it. Let's just do it. That's how it started. And we started with just the two of us talking about different things that we thought were kind of pantry staples, if you will. And in season two, we started introducing guests. That was a complete awesome game changer, where we kind of have an initial episode that talks about it, just the two of us. And then we bring somebody in that has a cool perspective on it to offer up to people, so that, like you, it's not just what we are seeing, but how's this third party seeing it? And it's just been such a blessing since then.
I'm a poetic person, like emotionally. And I just really love that name. Like, so I love those analogies and those things that we can see in everyday life. And then we can be like, oh yeah, that's like, we want to get rid of the junk from our pantries and we want to fill it with healthy things to make us make tastier, healthier things that nourish us. And right. So I love that.
Thanks. I mean, I'll let him know. Cause I mean, it was all him. I was like, will people know we're not cooking? And then I designed the logo and I was like, I'm put a big old cross in there. So that even if you think it's about cooking, you know, we're Christian. Yeah, I loved it. The second he said it, it just resonated in that way where you know this is it.
So in this series, we're dealing with God's answer to prayer being no. Have there been situations in your life when you prayed for something good, but God still said no?
You know, that's a cool question. I've actually worked hard to rewire how I think about what is good. Because, you know, if God says no, is it good? And it might be good in someone else's life. I'm not saying that if I'm praying for something and I don't get it, that means no one should get it because it's bad. But would it have been good for me? Because, you know, God knows who we are and what we can handle. And he has a plan for us. He knows how much of that plan we're going to carry out and what else outside of him we're going to choose, right? So he knows what our life circumstances are going to be. He knows what the times ahead are. Some of us, you know, some of us can handle more money and some would go into spiritual ruin. You know, some can handle fame or a bigger family or a smaller family or certain friendships or goods, gifts, opportunities, whatever you're praying for. Like some people can handle it and some can't. And he knows us. He knows our heart and he knows what's going to draw us closer to him and what's going to snatch us away and what lessons we are down to learn and what lessons we're not. So it's funny because with that perspective, you know, he's never withheld any good thing for me that I've asked for because if it was good, if it aligned with his will, then he's given it to me or he will give it to me. But, you know, he's definitely held things I thought were good, but he, at least for the time being, doesn't agree. I think a great example would be healing. You know, I had a really complicated tooth issue, like a tooth abscess when I had like no money. And I prayed for him to just heal it because I didn't want to pay. I didn't have a way to pay. I didn't want to go into debt over getting this tooth fixed or anything because it was right out of college. He didn't heal it. Does that mean he doesn't heal anyone? No. But he provided the money for me to go fix it. And that was just the way he wanted. And do I totally understand why? No. But it was a no, I'm not going to just do the miraculous healing thing. I'm going to just let you go to the dentist. And it's not going to be one of those miraculous healing stories. I struggle with trichotillomania, which is compulsive hair pulling. And for me, it manifests in my eyebrows. And it's how I deal with all this anxiety that I'm constantly battling. And I've prayed for him to take that. But he has. I could sit there and be like, why won't you take it? But I know that the root is the anxiety and the areas in my life that I haven't completely surrendered to him. So instead, I'm like, okay, this is really just a litmus test when my faith is struggling. And so I think for me, these little health things are some of the, I guess, most relatable in this moment. His thoughts are nothing like our thoughts, and his ways are far beyond anything you can imagine. So when you think like that, it's easier to rewire and be like, okay, it must not have been good for me. So thanks, God.
So you kind of answered this, but even with your reworking of how you define good, do you still deal with disappointment?
Oh, yeah. So I always say faith is preventative medicine, right? So the more you prep when you're not raw, the less rawness will drag you away from God. For me, back when I was new in my faith, I actually came to Christ because I was struggling romantically. Like I just could not find the true love of my life. And I had all these crazy, pathetic, heart-wrenching things happen instead. I was just done and I was broken and I'd come to like my own rock bottom. And that's when I told God, I'd always prayed to him and treated him like a genie. But in this moment, I was like authentically like, God, do not let me fall for somebody till it's the person you want me to because I can't take this anymore. I'd been praying to the genie, right? About like, please give me a guy, give me a guy. That was my solution, right? Not Jesus. He, instead of just giving me the guy, because I kept saying, give me this guy I'm pointing at right now. That obviously wasn't it, but I was building up bitterness and stuff. And that's why I kind of rebounded so hard when I finally just gave it over to him and said, okay, I'm not even going to pick anymore. Like you pick, you make the decision for me. It really changed everything. I started pursuing him in ways that I didn't think I ever would. I didn't even know they were necessary ways to pursue him. I've realized, you know, the more you keep trained on his word, it was a tough lesson in that raw state. It was hard to accept certain things, but as I healed, I could accept more learn more things. Now it's all about keeping trained on his word and praying for wisdom so that when that disappointment comes, the wisdom that you've already been asking for, that's already been growing in you, helps you kind of make sense of his ways and his reasons, you know. And it always reminds me of in 1 Samuel, Hannah is weeping to the Lord. She's discouraged. She's pouring out her heart. She's anguished. You know, I think that's the word they actually use, is she's anguished and she's just pouring her heart out. And you can go to God with your bitterness. You can go with your resentment and your disappointment, and you can ask him why. And I think one of the most important things is, you know, wisdom and actually reading his word and spending time with him is how you find out to some degree the why. And that's how I deal with it. I'm not the first to wrestle with God, and I won't be the last, but he's made it clear all the way back in the Old Testament that he is okay wrestling us. He can handle it. And that's given me the courage to kind of go to him in my raw state and demand some kind of answer. And when normally the answer I get is, I am God and I have your best interest in mind. So just remember to trust me. The more you do that, the more you just come at him raw with how you're feeling, the deeper your relationship will get, because he will always forgive. Like, he doesn't even hold it against you. So all that can happen is a deepening of the relationship.
It's like when you hit rock bottom, when you can finally start climbing up.
Exactly. Because you wake up when you hit. Like, you can fall asleep when you're falling, but when you hit, it jolts you awake.
And it's okay to have the disappointment.
Totally, totally. I mean, you have a dream, you have a goal, and it's based on something in you that has this need. And you're trying to come up with the best idea that would fit the need and take care of it. God has the ultimate solution, but you can only come with your imperfect suggestion. And you have your heart set on that being the answer, because it just seems like it will fix everything. But you have to trust that he can refine that, and he has the best. So we have to just wait on it. And so it's something you really have to keep repeating. It's a piece of the faith pill that you have to just keep on taking, even when you seem like everything's sunshine and daisies. Keep reminding yourself, even in the good times, because it'll start planting. It'll take root when the weather is great, so that when it gets real cold, the roots are strong and you'll still have it to fall back on, as opposed to waiting until the conditions are terrible to plant this idea and then trying to cultivate it into some fruit. Like, that's sometimes you have no choice, but that's really not the best time to start investing in finding a solution for the tough stuff.
So faithfulness is obviously important in my podcast.
Right.
So how have you seen God's faithfulness to you during his answers of no?
So I'm going to pick one of the less epic testimonies, because I find power in the practical moments where he intervenes, because we have a lot more practical moments than the epic ones, right? I've already said he always gives me better than what I've asked for, even when it's yes, because that's just who he is. But I really started seeing this when I became a mom. And the best example that I'm sure most moms can relate to is I was always praying for our baby girl to go to sleep. Like, not all the time, but when it was nap time, I was like, please, Lord, because she would fight it. She's a stubborn, awesome little girl. And and she would just fight it, and she'd be exhausted, and we would have like this schedule, and then all of a sudden, what schedule, you know, and she'd completely break it. And so I fixated on how much rest she was getting, and it became an idol, you know, something that can control me and rob me of my faith and make me, you know, when our plans caused her nap to be delayed or interrupted, it was not pretty. I did not act saved. Like, I could say the worst things. I could be so frustrated and angry and resentful at whatever it was, whether it be a siren passing our house or service going long, it did not matter. It became an obsession, right? I would go to God with those raw feelings every single time, and I kept praying for him to help me stop obsessing, right? So I was praying for him to fix her naps, for me to stop obsessing. He did not fix her naps in that time period, right? Like, her naps were still like seemingly all over the place, but he did answer the stop obsessing part, because he started showing me very clearly that, you know, one, she was fine. Like, she's still alive. She's still with it. Two, more importantly, that he would work with her sleep times. Like, she was sleeping. We surrendered her over to him before she was even born. He would shape my whole day. The day I thought I had perfectly curated, he would shape my whole day to align with her naps when I would just kind of flow. It was amazing how, you know, I'd be praying for her to nap so she would be up for a play date or some meeting I had that I was bringing her to, or what have you. you, she wouldn't go to sleep at her normal time. And so suddenly all my nap calculations are completely off and I'm stressed out and I'm anxious and I'm like, God, why? Like, don't you want me to do this or that or whatever? And when she would finally sleep, I'd get a text saying it was canceled or, hey, can we push it back an hour? I'm running late. Or, you know, what have you? Maybe it would buy me time to answer a phone call for someone who needed me that I wouldn't have been able to answer if she was awake. Like, God always knew. And so now her naps are pretty clear cut and structured. And I didn't have to really do anything except surrender this idol to him. Her naps normalized when I finally didn't care about her naps like that anymore. And so it's kind of a no, because in the moment that day, you know, like, so what if tomorrow her nap is great if I care about the nap today, right? So every time I was praying, like, fix this nap right now, it was a no in the sense of, no, I'm not going to make her just fall asleep right now. She's her own person. But it always seemed like it was a good thing to ask because I care about her sleep, right? Like, what's bad about a baby getting her rest and not being overtired and cranky? But he had something bigger and he had something better. And now her naps pretty much like clockwork. And I say, you want to go nap, nap? She nods. She crawls up the stairs herself. You know, like, what? I did not do that at all. Like, that is all God's glory. It's when I let go and said, okay, God, I can't control her naps. I can control letting you have it. So very practical, hopefully relatable. And it's not one of those epic moments. For me, it was wracking my church relationships. It was bad. And it all started because I was frustrated. He wasn't answering the prayer that I thought was so reasonable.
I'm going to carry on with that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I'm the same way. Like, nap time and bedtime have been the biggest stressors of my entire life, I think, with three kids. Like, it's just been horrible. I'm a planner. I'm like, we need to leave by 9:15 to get there by 11 so that we can get into the whatever. Like, I'm just thinking, we went to the zoo last week. So we had to leave by 9:15 to get there by 11 in our little, you had to reserve a time because of all the quarantine stuff. To get into our reserved time. And if things don't follow my like incredibly tightly planned day, it just throws the whole thing off. Why would I plan things so tightly? I'll put the related things in for this. And this is like a self-promotional thing, which sounds kind of bad. But like during the quarantine, my oldest has some special needs. And so all of a sudden, like losing school, losing all of his therapy, losing any structure. And he's also very empathetic. So he knew I was stressed out. So that made him stressed out. And there was just so many things. For the first like 6 weeks of that quarantine was me just trying to like control everything. Me trying to be like, well, if this would fall in line here, God, then I could get him to his Zoom therapy meeting on time. And if the baby took her nap, then I wouldn't have to juggle three kids doing that with temper tantrums and screaming babies and all this. And things were not lining up and I was just a mess. I was an absolute mess. If you look at my show notes, you'll see a link to the Next Right Thing, which is the episode that I wrote right after I took a break from the podcast because there was just, I needed something to go. Right. And that was the first episode that I did when I came back in. It's the same. Like after 6 weeks, finally of no answers, I'm not getting school in. I'm not getting therapies right. Nothing is progressing. We're just all a stressed out temper tantrum mess. And I was probably the one having the most temper tantrums of all of the people in my house. And God finally just smacked me. It's like, you need to just give this to me. You're not the one that designed him this way. And you're not the one that knows him the best. Like I'm maybe the one who knows him the best here on earth, but I didn't design him and I didn't make him the way he was. And I didn't put him in our family. And not saying that I wouldn't, but like God put him in our family on purpose. All of the answers of like, can you just make this easier somehow? They were all no. Finally, I was like, okay, I'm gonna work on me.
Yeah.
And that's when God was like, yes, that's what I wanted the whole time. The quarantine was stressful, but I wouldn't change anything because of the way that God, like he worked through us and he made us a team and we fought through the tension and both of us together. I think I'm closer to him now than I was before when things were structured and working the way they were supposed to.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's what I've seen in all of this. That's why I get excited at the nose because I'm like, wait, I thought I had it figured out. I thought this was a beautiful, brilliant plan that was going to make me thrilled. And you're saying no, that means something better, really? So like my perfectly quote unquote plan isn't even good enough. Like it's not even like I can expect more. Okay, bring it on. Like that's fine. That's kind of where I've gotten because, you know, I mean, like I said, the trichotillomania, the anxiety, all that stuff. I was like, I've become hyper aware of what I'm clutching to. You know, at first I've had it since I was two. What's stressing out a 2-year-old? I don't know. But what I know is that it's like like a smoke detector. I consider emotions to be smoke detectors, right? They're not a GPS system. You're not supposed to follow them to your destination, but they're the smoke detectors. That has been one of my smoke detectors to be like, what am I being a control freak about? What do I need to give to God right now? And so maybe it's not ever going to be taken from me till I pass out of this life or rapture, which would be the super coolest. But I'm like, I'm team rapture, man. I'm like, but regardless of what the plan is, maybe it's just always going to be a tool to humble me and remind me of when I can give it to him. And then what a blessing, because some people don't have such an obvious way of figuring that out.
I think that's a good segue into talking about faithfulness on our end. I started this whole podcast of trying to understand what God's faithfulness really means, because it was one of those words that you hear a lot and it just gets so overused that you forget to like dig deep and be like, what does that actually look like? What's that mean?
Right.
And part of what God's been teaching me is, yes, I'm faithful, but I also expect faithfulness from you.
Right.
For people who are dealing with some of that anger and resentment that you were talking about earlier, when we don't understand God's no, how have you worked to stay faithful to God despite the emotions that come?
You know how people mentally talk to themselves? I mean, maybe not everyone, but definitely me. Like, I have an inner monologue going pretty much all day unless I'm talking to somebody. I also know that God knows all my thoughts. And so when I'm talking to myself, I've kind of revised that, like spun that around. And so I'm always talking to me and God. And I think that's actually, it's not, you know, that fluffy theological verbiage, but isn't that just a clear picture? I believe he's there, because no matter what I'm saying in my head, my inner monologue is me and God. Normally what comes back to me are verses, like a verse will come to mind, but I assume he can hear every thought, meaning I can't hide anything from him. Meaning I have to I kind of just feel, for the most part, I feel that grace, because I'm like being, sometimes I'm really ugly, you know, I'm like very frank. It deepens the relationship, like I said earlier, but it also just reinforces that he's there and he's real and he can hear my thoughts, meaning he's pretty special, you know, because no one else can. He's the only one that knows all of me. He's still answering my prayers. And that just keeps me grounded in so many ways. And still, I can be prideful pretty much every day. And still, I stumble pretty much, like, definitely every day. I sit there and I'm like, are you serious? Like, sometimes I don't come out with the most respectful language. So thank God for his grace. But I'm like, how is that not a yes? Really? Why would you give me that? Really, God? I know this is a test, but really today you're going to test me. I'm not in the mood. You know, like very me at my worst. But I know that when you bring God in, it's hard to stay the same level of bitter for long. You know, as you start talking, you're re-realizing that this is God. You need to be more respectful, even if you feel some sort of way. And so you end up softening because, okay, you're saying things, but also now, like I said, there's verses coming into my head. And I trust, I very rarely can cite them. I just know they're in the Bible. You know, I start softening and softening until he can offer that truth that I can now handle, because he has diffused the bomb because I'm always talking to him. So when people say, you know, I don't have a good prayer life, I'm like, one, your prayers don't have to be verbal. Like, you don't have to speak them. But on top of that, like, if you're talking to him in your head, even if it's about the weather, if it's about anything, if you're just thinking, that's prayer. You're in conversation with him. And that deepens the relationship. And, you know, my husband, he's a great example. He talks about obeying even when you don't feel like doing something, because eventually, you know, if you're dedicated in your relationship with God, you're going to start wanting to do the things that at first you didn't want to, because, you know, the blessings that come from blessing others will soften your heart. You know, if you're watering, you will be watered. And so you start understanding on a whole new level what this whole Christian walk is about. And I mean, if you're not big on relationship with God and you force obedience, it might end up in legalism. But that's why talking to God all day is so important to me, because it keeps me from legalism. It keeps me so grounded and reliant on that relationship. I'm never alone because I know he can hear my thoughts. And so anytime I need him, all I have to do is just think, you know? And so I think that has been at the root of it all. That's the faithfulness. Like, that's how faithfulness has manifested in me, no matter how I feel or what I'm thinking, because I just take for granted, because it is something he has granted us. I take for granted he hears my thoughts and that he will respond when I ask him a question. And since it's my inner monologue that I can't stop anyway, it's been perpetually reinforced every single day since I've come to Christ, that he hears me and that things happen because he hears me, because we're talking. I think that, and just having that idea that he can handle anything you throw at him, and his grace covers whatever repercussions would come from anything you would say to him, and you don't have to worry.
I have a random real life situation like that that happened today, actually. Oh. I put up a post. I was asking a question that I thought was like, this is a really cool question and it's going to lead to some good. And then I got a whole bunch of backlash because I used the wrong phrase. Mm. I didn't realize that it was a phrase that would be hurtful or shameful to people.
Right.
And it was one that I honestly had no idea that there was even any other way to say it. So I don't know. I had some learning today. And at first I was like, don't people get that I don't understand why this is offensive. And I don't understand why people get so upset about one little phrase that obviously means the same thing as what they're telling me to say instead. There was a moment where I was like about to respond of like, come on. There's so much tension right now in anything of like political correctness and all of that. And I was like, right. Can you give me a break, please? Like, do I have to constantly be thinking about what I say? And that's what I said in my head. And God was like, yeah, you do. You need to think about everything you say. He instantly was like, think about their perspective and why this was hurtful to them. And they're not mad at you. They're trying to help you. I reread it. And I was like, I was reading that in the completely wrong tone. Like they were just wanting me to be like, hey, this is not the right way to say this. Here's a better way. Here's why I think that. I'm giving you some advice, not trying to tear you down or make you feel stupid. And so it was just like that, where my inner dialogue of like, come on, this is stupid. Like, and God was like, no, it's not. And there was a moment of like, I felt almost like ice melting of the anger turning into something different. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. It's amazing. You know, I just did a life group study. Shay does, you know, 98% of them, but every once in a while I pop in and do a little thing. And I did one about speaking because I think you're absolutely right. Right now, everybody is raw. Okay, I won't say everybody. See, this is the perfect example of being careful with what you say, because everybody, I'm sure there's somebody that's just doing fine somewhere on earth, right? But it seems like there's a lot of people that are just raw, and there's a lot of correction going on. There's a lot of empathy needing to happen. He gave from his word in Proverbs alone. There are so many mentions of how we need to be careful of what we say. Only speak life. Don't speak words of death. Don't be idle with our words. And I mean, look, we're just talking all the time. We're on a podcast. You know, I mean, we're talking all the time and there's so much idle chatter. And it's humbling when I looked at all those verses to see how much we're in need of his guidance in such a practical everyday thing, because talking is like our number one go-to if we have the ability to speak. It just happens. We just go off. And it's amazing that that's also one of the most powerful weapons that God has given us.
I'm going to go back a little bit because you alluded to it earlier.
Yeah.
And the thing that I loved so much when I was asking for people to talk with me about this was when you said, I get excited when God says no, because I know he's got something else in mind. And I think I've decided to title this episode, When No Means Yes, because of that. So how can you encourage someone to start pursuing that mind frame?
I was a psych major, so I've always been big on how the brain actually is, right? And so a little mini psych lesson: when we are thinking, we're building synapses, which means connections between things in our brain. When you're thinking about popcorn, right? Let's say your favorite type of popcorn is like the super movie butter one, right? So when you think of popcorn, you're thinking of butter. And then maybe you're thinking of movies. And then you're thinking of your favorite movie you ever saw in the theater. And it goes and it goes and it goes, as long as, until your thought pattern's interrupted. The strongest memories, the strongest associations, those synapses are stronger associations that take longer to degrade. So that's why if you learn something in passing that you don't really care about, you don't really revisit, you might forget it, because the synapse is weak, frail, degrades. And now there's no longer as many connections between the thing you learned and anything else that would trigger you remembering that thing. Whereas something like the Bible, when you're really reading it all the time, you start building all of these connections in your head. And the more you read his word, the more you spend time with him, you're starting to reinforce the truth, right? The only confirmable truth source in existence. You're putting that into your brain and you're reinforcing. So when he says you're changing your mind, you know, the word repent means to change your mind. It's a physical effect as well. It's not just spiritual. Physically, you are altering your brain and your brain matter when you put words of life into your being. So again, I think from that perspective, if you just sit there and say faith is preventative medicine, what do I mean by that? It means the more you build up in your faith, the less things can come at you, right? And so the pantry podcast, like big analogies on like food, it's like a good diet. You know, you shouldn't wait. I mean, we all sometimes do, right? But you don't wait to eat right when you're on your deathbed from something that a good diet could have prevented, right? You eat right when you're feeling fine, because it's going to help prevent a lot of hardship. It's going to become a lifestyle, and you won't even realize when it's intervening on your behalf against harmful things, because you're not storing up bad stuff. You're storing up good stuff, you know, like when you're pregnant, prenatal vitamins, because you're giving off all this nutrition to a whole new life, and you need to kind of reconsume more nutrition. You know, God, he's everything good. He's the best, you know, omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent, omni, everything that's awesome. So we've got to be real. We have to take some hard, maybe even offensive truths from God's word and start owning them when we're in a good place. That's what I mean by like this preventative medicine, because you can use your faith when you're already struggling with something. We know that. But a lot of people are like, well, that's when I exercise my faith, is when it's hard. But when you exercise your faith and put it into practice when things seem fine, you're less likely to be affected so hard and be completely racked later on. You know, I mean, it's incredibly prideful to think our great idea is greater than his. When you're praying to him, think of his response as like that constructive criticism of your goal. You're going to seek out wise counsel to improve your own idea if you're trying to start a business or something, right? So every prayer we have is like an idea that we want to have happen. So when God nudges us, corrects us, says no, says wait on it, you know, that's, take it as that constructive, perfect criticism of improving on your plan by making it his plan. Sometimes it just needs a tweak. Sometimes it needs a complete uprooting. But the ultimate goal, you know, is to pray for him to use us rather than us trying to use him to answer our prayers. But you know, that's a whole other topic. But that's kind of how I've changed my mind, is this literal reinforcing of certain synapses by putting the word of God in me. And the more time I spend in that, the less time I'm spending elsewhere reinforcing those old lies that were causing me to put so much more question on things and so much more doubt when it came to answered prayers.
I love that. I love, obviously, I'm a nurse, so I like that, like, medical sciencey stuff thrown in. I love when science proves the Bible.
Oh, I do. I love it so much.
It's just a good, obviously, it's a good feeling. And as a science person, I like having that proof. And God honors that. Like, he knows he created me that way. And he knows that I need sometimes to have, like, I'm going to show you outside of the Bible how I really do control everything. And yes, I love when science can back up the Bible and vice versa. So basically what we've been saying this whole time, and you've done such an amazing job with this, is when God says no, that means he's saying yes to something better.
Yes. Amen.
So we always end with God having the last word, and you have picked Proverbs 3, 25, and 26. Can you tell us why you picked that?
I think it comes down to the essence of what we've been talking about, you know, just touching on the fears that come when he does say no. And I think going back to reinforcing synapses, owning this verse, I always say own it, like make it yours. This is in your heart. This is a truth of the Lord that is also true for you. And when you read it over and over, not just absentmindedly, but actively read it and think on it, it's going to change your mind about how you see his no. And also those moments where you don't even know what his answer is, because those are some of the scariest moments. And so that's why I chose these verses.
So I will read that in a minute when we close out. But Michelle, I just wanted to say thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. And I feel like we're kindred spirits. I wish we lived closer so we could hang out more.
Oh, we love road trips. So trust, we will make it back to Ohio with our little girl.
Awesome. So thank you for sharing this and for giving us a little bit of lesson and telling us about yourself and just being vulnerable and honest.
It has been an honor.
So Proverbs 3, 25 and 26. You need not be afraid of sudden disaster or the destruction that comes upon the wicked, for the Lord is your security. He will keep your foot from being caught in a trap.
This has been episode 42 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, entitled When No Means Yes with Michelle Watson. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/42. You can find us on social media at Facebook or Instagram.